Blog Talk Radio.
This is Saida Garrett, and I'm tuned in to Intro to Info with my girl, Makeisha.
You are listening to Intro to Info with your host, Makeisha from D.C. That's me, open-minded, business-minded, spiritual, a little hood, and very nerdy and down-to-earth. And Queen of Hearts from Florida. She's so ladylike, family-oriented, quick-witted, and a real pillar in her community. On our platform, we discuss anything imaginable, but we talk a lot of pop culture, current events, and speak on our personal life experiences. We interview fantastic guests with unique stories, and Lord knows we just have organic fun. And check this out. If you want to join in on the fun, call in at 515-605-9376. We are live on Saturdays from 9 to 10 p.m. EST on the J. King Network. If you are an info for info, tune in to Intro to Info.
Wow, it's a lot of callers already on the call queue. So, wow, welcome to today's episode of Intro to Info. My name is Makeisha, and I host this show along with some phenomenal women by the name of Queen of Hearts and Tamika, and they'll be joining us momentarily. Today is Saturday, May 18th, 2024, and we broadcast live every Saturday from 9 until 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on the J. King Network. This network is comprised of some great shows that cover the spectrum of conversation, mine being one of them, mine being my favorite. But after me, I love the J. King. It's called Kings in the Morning. That's his show. And then there are other great shows on the network as well. So have a good time listening to my show as well as any other shows on the J. King Network. And J. King, by the way, he's a great musician. He's in Club Nouveau and has had a storied career in the music industry, and I sought him out personally. I said, I would like to be affiliated with him and on the network. He gave me a chance to fast forward about 7 to 8 years later, and here we are. So that said, I'm excited and delighted to welcome our special guest. Her name is Kristen Brown, and she's going to be talking to us today about nutrition. More on Kristen, she's a certified nutrition specialist who focuses on whole patient individualized nutrition to provide the recommendations that will best suit each individual. She is happy to help work with your children, whether they have food allergies, are picky slash selective eaters, deal with chronic constipation, or have other nutritional concerns. Kristen also focuses on the nutritional and lifestyle needs of women working on their fertility journey, whether it is in the preconception pregnancy or postpartum stage. This should be interesting. Kristen, I'm going to take you off of mute, tell you thank you for giving us an hour of your time, and ask you, how is your day going up to this point?
I'm pretty good. My son had a fundraiser for his school today at the roller skating rink, so we just got back from a couple hours of roller skating.
Okay, great. So you are a mom and a professional. I know that juggling that has to be something. I think that you're married too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you probably have a full life. Do I have that correct?
Well, I'm certainly busy. I don't know if it's cool, but they definitely keep me on my toes a lot.
And, one of the reasons why I selected you to be a guest on the show is because this is not a subject that we've tackled, and I'm very curious to know what it is that you do, how it is that you help people, and definitely want to teach our audience just some things that they need to know in general about nutrition. But it seems like your particular profession is kind of niche. Do I have that correct?
Yeah. Yes. Very much so, yes.
So,
a lot of nutritionists really – oh, go ahead.
No, I just wanted, I want you to finish what you were saying, but I wanted to ask you, what made you interested in this field?
It's very silly. I love food. I love to eat food, and I got very interested in the science behind food, how it reacts and responds in our body, what things it does for us, and, you know, how eating the right foods can really help us grow and thrive as people. And I had a long career in theater prior to becoming a nutritionist, and ultimately had to leave the profession because the schedule did not work out well for when my husband and I started having our family. It was very demanding. I had to be home, away from home, more than I wanted to. And so I really started looking for another career that had that same passion for me that theater used to, but offered much more flexibility with my schedule. And I kept coming back to food and kids, and I love them both and was trying to figure out a way to put it all together. A friend of mine told me about the Maryland University of Integrative Health, which happens to be located in Laurel, Maryland, and it's very close to where I live. And they had a nutrition program, and it immediately spoke to me. And so just with my love of food and of eating and knowing that somehow I wanted to connect it with kids, I signed up for their graduate program. And as I started my journey through graduate school, I realized there's not a lot of nutritionists that focus primarily on children's health and nutrition. Most of them focus on your standard adults. A lot of them focus on gut health and weight loss. And I knew that that was not where I wanted to go. So I really started honing my practice more on focusing on pediatric nutrition. And as an odd twist of fate to the story, I found out 5 weeks after I was accepted to my graduate program that I was actually pregnant with my son. So I kind of used myself in grad school kind of as a guinea pig to really start paying attention to how I was eating during my pregnancy and, you know, what made me feel good, what was not ideal, and really just paid attention to how my body was changing and the way I was eating. And then as I continued through the program, my son was born and I started focusing a lot on his nutrition as well and really used that as kind of the baseline for starting my practice once I graduated and got my certificate.
This is so good. What takeaways do you have from your pregnancy that you learned about nutrition and, you know, how it affects, right, your pregnancy?
Yeah. You know, as crazy as some of those weird pregnancy cravings sound, you really have to lead into them because if you try to ignore them, then that's all you can think about. It's all you want to eat. So I really learned to kind of like literally trust my gut when it came to picking foods. And I knew that, you know, sometimes I would pick something that maybe wasn't the healthiest option. You know, every once in a while, I had to have a donut no matter what. But I tried to also make sure I was really balancing myself with a lot of fresh fruits and vegetables and doing the best that I could to make sure I kept my energy levels up and that I was feeling good and feeling strong. And pairing that too was drinking a lot of water, staying hydrated, trying to get good sleep as much as I could. And just, you know, listening when my body was telling me that there was something I wanted and trying to give into that instead of ignore it. That made a really big difference.
That's good. Now, do you incorporate anything that you learned into your practice today from when you were pregnant?
I certainly share stories of mine with clients when it seems like there might be somebody who is experiencing something similar to what I did. But one of the big things that's really important with my practice is realizing that whether it's an adult woman or a child that I'm working with, literally every single person and their body is completely different from everybody else. So I try to really incorporate what someone is experiencing in their own life as far as their stress levels, their sleep habits, their diet, their personal relationships, take all that into account and know that a recommendation for them might be ideal, but to give the same recommendation to another person, it might not respond to their body the same way. So while I can share my own anecdotes with other clients, I try to make my recommendations for them very individualized, very personalized, knowing that things that happen to me are very different than what they experience as well.
All right, so I'm listening to you, and it sounds like what you're doing, because you take so much time, apparently, with it appears that you do, because you're not making it a universal thing. You're taking the time to know
right.
each individual. I'm hearing that it might be just a time-consuming, like you might give this thing free work, I mean, because you might go after hours, I mean.
I mean, we all try real hard not to bring work home with us, right? But sometimes it's a little bit inevitable. But I absolutely try to make sure that everyone gets the time they need. It's, you know, the medical professions and the appointments we have with our conventional medical practitioners right now always feel so rushed to me that they have to try and squeeze as many people into a day as possible. And I don't want anyone who comes to work with me to ever feel like I am brushing them aside or rushing them through the door. So I certainly make sure that I give everyone the time that they need, the time that I need to get information from them as well, and that everyone feels like they've been heard when they're talking to me and they have particular concerns about their or their child's nutrition needs. Because sometimes people who come to see me have already seen other medical professions and feel like they were ignored or that their concerns were told that they weren't anything to be worried about, but they feel instinctually like something is still not right. And a lot of times what somebody just needs is to be heard, you know, just to have somebody listen to what they're saying, they're dealing with their symptoms and their discomfort and issues. Having somebody listen to them and believe them can make all the difference. And so I feel like sometimes sessions with me might also feel like therapy. But I am absolutely not a therapist. And if that comes about, the first thing I do is refer them to a therapist to make sure they're getting those needs covered too. But yeah, there's a lot of conversation, a lot of talking that really is a part of my sessions with my clients, because getting the information for them is crucial to what I can then recommend. And I absolutely want them to feel like their concerns are being heard first and foremost.
Kristen, this is so good. I'm enjoying this thoroughly, and I hope the listeners are too. Again, it's a lot of people on the call queue, so hello, everybody, and thank you for your listenership. Grandma is on here, so Grandma, I love you so much, and I just want to give you a shout-out. Okay. All right, Kristen. Back to you, Kristen. One thing that I learned from a guest who was on here recently is the way that the body is interconnected and the way that food, you kind of alluded to this earlier, but the way that our intake of food, how our body actually reacts to it and how the body knows if a food is good for us or not and what it does with bad food and what it does with good food. And I was just blown away by that. I know that you can help me dissect that, right?
Yeah. Everyone's bodies kind of react different. There are some foods that feel great to one person and terrible to another. And we see that a lot with people who have allergies or food intolerances and sensitivities where, you know, a tomato can be some person's favorite food and can be highly allergic to somebody else. It's really hard sometimes to classify foods just as being good or bad, because it's very relative to each individual person. And kind of like you said, I don't do things universally. If there was one universal way for all of us to eat and all of us to feel amazing, we'd be doing it already. So food issues can be very confusing and very frustrating for a lot of people, especially if they are dealing with allergies and intolerances. And it's time consuming sometimes to try and pinpoint what might be causing you discomfort and making your body not feel great when you eat. But ultimately, a lot of nutrition really centers on being aware of your own body, paying attention when you eat and suddenly feel discomfort, pain, you know, when things don't feel right, when you're stuck in the bathroom after a meal. Those are all very important signs to start paying attention to what you're consuming and maybe tracking if it looks like there's something that is causing these symptoms regularly that maybe you might want to pull back a little bit from your regular diet. It's very, very hard sometimes to determine what those problematic foods can be for some people. And it really gets to be a big frustration when you struggle with digestion issues and aren't entirely sure where they're stemming from.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Intro to Info with me, Nikisha, our guest, Kristen Brown, who is dropping a whole bunch of gems. Hope you got a notebook like I do or your phone notes. And it's really learning something right now because this information is timely. And I always am interested, Kristen, because some jobs are fad, some jobs are not recession-proof. But this is, first of all, this is you're in demand because it's not a lot of people who do exactly what you do. And, you know, when I advise my students, I kind of hint to them that this is a good way to go to get into a job. There's not a lot of people that are not a lot of people in it, like recession-proof and you know, it's hard to be proof. So that was
absolutely
part. And kudos to that friend who kind of knew what you were trying to do and led you exactly to this
absolutely
particular profession.
Yeah, let me say, too, that things really shifted when COVID hit. And being able to make my job virtual as well and still be able to help people was immensely helpful because otherwise I don't know where I would be right now. You know, having to stop seeing clients in person for an extended period of time was problematic. And thankfully I was able to find a way to keep things going. But yeah, you always want to make sure that when the next big recession hits that you're not going to be in trouble when things turn around.
That's right. That's right. Now, do people come to you because you focus on nutrition? Do people come to you because they want to lose weight sometimes?
I do sometimes get people that are looking more for weight loss. A lot of times what I will tell those people is that is not typically the primary focus of my practice. I'm happy to work with people that want assistance on a weight loss journey, but if that is the biggest thing that they are really concerned with, I oftentimes will refer them to other local nutritionists who have weight loss as kind of the primary focus of their practice. If somebody is willing to talk with me about other nutritional concerns first and we look at weight loss as possibly, you know, something that happens as a side effect of other nutritional changes, that is much more what I lean towards, simply because I try to center more on working with children and those who are looking at fertility or sometimes infertility as well. Weight loss is something I typically do not work with a whole lot.
Okay, great. Let's talk more about the children and
their
nutritional, I don't know, allergies and what do you see a lot of with regard to children just in general?
I definitely probably get the most clients coming to me with children who are picky or selective eaters. And I feel like for the most part, most kids kind of go through at least a little bit of a picky eating phase anyway. But these are kids who either have really struggled with consuming new foods for a very long period of time, or there's a possibility where there's something else at play that's kind of blocking them from wanting to eat more than a select few foods. And you definitely see it happening more with children who have autism or ADHD, some sensory processing disorders, and things of that nature. So that is definitely starting to become much more common with the families that I work with. But definitely a lot of parents who feel like they are struggling with picky or selective eaters is a lot of the families that I work with.
I see that so much. I study, you know, just the spectrum in general and autism. And when I see that as one of the common symptoms of autism, I just find it to be so interesting because you will have a child who only eats chicken nuggets and pizza and milk and only watches a particular episode of Sesame Street. I just find it to be so interesting that, and if you take off the regimen, they will act out. So it's just interesting that you said that large demographic of your clientele, because I saw that a lot in my study of just the spectrum in general. That is something else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the one thing I tell all parents who feel like they're kind of stuck with a child who might be a very selective eater is that when it comes to helping them work through trying new foods, the biggest things they can have are patience and time. And it's hard as a parent when you feel like maybe you're not giving them the sustenance that they really need to grow and thrive. But like you said, kind of disrupting where they already are can lead to other issues down the road. So it's definitely a very slow process that requires a lot of patience. And you know, little baby steps, sometimes what seems like the smallest little change ends up making a very big difference to what a child is willing to try. But, you know, sometimes it's hard to see those little steps initially as progress. And I definitely can see where a lot of parents really feel frustrated and need some outside assistance. So I always hope that, you know, I'm one they that they're interested in coming to for help, but it is not something that happens quickly and overnight. Working with those selective eaters is definitely a very slow process, meeting them where they are and doing things to ensure that they continue to feel comfortable through the whole process.
Right, because it's almost like I feel as though they don't even give other foods a chance. They taste one that they like. They just like, ooh, this is all that I ever want. That again is an association with the part of the spectrum. And I'm glad that you mentioned that it takes and requires a lot of patience. I know on your part as well as the parents' part and the child's part. Mm-hmm. So if you're not a patient person, this is not the field for you. Okay, because Kristen,
that's right.
What did I do when? You have an indecisive young person who doesn't know what they want to do when they leave college. Well, we start to talk about personality traits because that means a lot. And then what you like and your actual passion from inside. You mentioned how you were genuinely interested. You said you love food and you wanted to find a career where you could intertwine, right? Food and kids. So
yes.
I love when people are in the fields that they, you know, this is what I like, and I'm going to find a career in it. I love this. This is ideally what we all will want to do for a career, right, what we love.
Yes, yes. Sometimes I wish I had been able to discover it sooner, but, you know, things happen at the time they do for a reason, and so I have to take that for what it is. But, yes, it took me definitely more time in my life than I anticipated to get to, you know, that job that, like, really was more love than work. But I'm very happy I'm here now.
Good. Look, better late than never, and it's all already written. I see that Tamika has joined us, who hosts the show. Tamika, I gave you a shout-out earlier, and another again. Good evening, and thank you for joining us. How are you?
Hi, Makisha. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, my God.
That is your best friend, Miss Wanda, not realizing you're alive.
Hi, Miss Wanda. How you doing?
Hi, Makisha. I'm fine, and you?
All right. And I know that you guys are, so Tam, if you have to go on mute and then come back in when able, I understand, because you living your best life, and I'm not mad at that. But yeah,
you do.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So back to you, Kristen. Thank you for allowing me to mess with my closest friends real quick. Who are host the show. Now, Kristen, I have my speculations as to what might cause chronic constipation, right, as far as food.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking dairy.
Mm-hmm.
But is there anything else that we need to know that might surprise us that could cause chronic constipation?
Of course. Definitely, like you said, dairy does seem to be kind of the leading factor with many, many children. But for some, it's more, it could be like a gluten issue. It could be an issue with soy. Those are usually kind of the bigger ones that really cause the biggest issues for kids when it comes to constipation. But you're absolutely right. Like, usually dairy is kind of top of the list. And usually what I start with as far as looking at possibly reducing intake for a child if a parent has been dealing with constipation for a while. There's also the possibility, too, that it could be a little bit of a power struggle. Not always the case, but one thing I share with my clients a lot is that when it comes to their bodies, children realize very early on that adults make so many of the decisions for them, and they often really feel like they don't have a lot of say in what goes on in their own day. And with food, there's a bit of a division of responsibility. You know, parents decide, they're the ones who do the shopping, they get all the food, they usually are preparing all the meals and snacks. They decide when to eat. So they're usually the ones that kind of decide when meal times and snack times are in their household, and they decide where to eat, whether it's going to be all sitting together at a dinner table, whether you're sitting in front of the TV watching a movie, if you're on the go and eating in the car. Those are the big responsibilities that adults have when it comes to food. But kids get to decide if and how much food they're going to eat. And the same kind of goes as far as going to the bathroom as well. They can decide if they are going to go or not. And once some kids realize that that's one of the only things they really have power over to control, there are instances where that constipation also is just a power struggle with them. They want to control it so much, it sometimes goes to the extreme. So I've seen both ends, where it is more of a power struggle and parents have been pushing the kids too much, and so this is where they can fight back. And sometimes it is really strictly just some sort of undiagnosed food allergy or food intolerance that they deal with, and they haven't been able to pinpoint the issue. So there are certainly a couple of different effects of what could cause that problem, but you hit it the nail right on the head with, like, 9 times out of 10, it definitely ends up being an issue related to dairy intake.
You know, I see that a lot. I have to decline. Somebody's calling me. Why? You guys know I'm hosting the show. Why are you and FaceTiming me at that? All right. One of the things that I see with children of any age, from young children onward, 18 and over, of parents just being dictators, which to a degree, and I'm not a parent. Let me preface that with that. I'm not a parent. But I do see when children are given no freedom or just no decision making, and never asked, well, how do you feel about this, or do you like this? They do, like you said, rebel, whether it's the parents know about it or not. I'm so glad that you said that, because it's, how do you say, I'm vindicated. But and how they're going to find a way to get some type of control. Look what you just said about they hold their own bowels. Or I've never heard this before.
Yeah. It's true. Like, but you, when you really think about it, what can kids decide on their own when they're young? They can decide if they're actually going to go to the bathroom or not. They can decide if they are going to actually put food in their mouth and eat it, and they can decide if they're, like, actually going to lay down and fall asleep. That's kind of about it. You know, adults mm-hmm. otherwise are doing everything for them, especially when they're very young. So with such limited power, a lot of times they're really often pushed to the extremes, like either deciding they're not going to eat anything that's put in front of them because they just don't want to, they had no choice in the matter, they're going to hold bowels, or, you know, like, forget bedtime, I'm going to stay up all night and do what I want to do. And when we start to give them a little bit more of the opportunity to contribute to what we're doing, when they feel like they have a little bit more choice and power when it comes to making decisions, especially about their own bodies and what's going on around them, I mm-hmm. definitely see less of that rebellion, less of pushing to the extremes. And you even notice as they get older too and start to hit the teenage years that a lot of times when they're given more choice and opportunity earlier on, there's significantly less, like, teenage rebellion later, which I'm certainly hoping to avoid as much as possible with my own kids.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I'll tell you, this is something else. Guys, if anybody has any questions, press the number one. Or, Tamika, if you want to interject, I want to hold Kristen, but I am having fun. I am learning a lot with regard to this. And I heard what you said, Kristen, earlier about a lot of the times your clients just want to be heard. That's the same mm-hmm. idea that a child just want to be heard. People don't even need to have
right.
control,
right.
but just, do you hear me? Because some people are beta type. Some people are type A. Some people are type B, which is, I mean, very little authority or control. But just make me think that I have a little bit and I'm good. That's enough. And then some people have
exactly.
to dominate everything. So, you know, again, you just, like you said, it's individualized. Like you said, your nutrition plan is, so is everybody. But there are commonalities, mm-hmm. like a smile is universal. But it really does boil down to who are we dealing with. But I'm not going to forget what you said about, you know, I'm just going to freeze that in my head, that a child will, they're going to get control somehow, even from young. It's
right.
almost like it's natural yep. for us to want to have some form. I actually read that in a psychology book. Thank you for saying that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It kind of goes along, too, with the way that we even introduce food to children. When they are born, they have an innate sense of knowing when they're full and when they're hungry. And whether they are formula fed or breastfed, it makes no difference. They know when they're hungry. They tell us when they need to eat. And when they're done, they push away because they can feel their bodies are full. And as they start to get older and we start to introduce solid foods to kids, and even sometimes when they're bottle fed before solid foods, you definitely see adults try to, you know, see if you can get them to drink just a little bit more, or, you know, when solids are introduced, seeing if you can, you know, get a couple more spoonfuls of food in. Like, we are always judging how much children eat and think either it's not enough or it's too much. And really, they know. And we almost start to teach them to ignore their body's cues for satiety and hunger. And if we mm-hmm. let them listen to their bodies as they continue to grow older, it really helps reduce the disordered eating behaviors that potentially can come a little later in life. So I speak with clients a lot about that too, you know, removing that pressure from kids right from the beginning, not forcing them to take more bites when they say they're full, not judging if they ask for another serving because maybe they truly didn't have enough and they are still hungry, but letting mm-hmm. them dictate when they've had enough or when they need more is really important, because as soon as we start trying to make those decisions for them as well and putting that pressure on them, it really does start to change not only their relationship with food, but kind of their thoughts around it as well. And the last thing we want to do is start creating disordered behaviors in children, which later become disordered eating behaviors in adults. It really carries on for a long time. So I certainly talk a lot with the parents that I work with in hopes that right from the beginning, we can try and eliminate as much of that negative association around food as possible and make mealtimes and eating just something that kids always enjoy and see a positive aspect for.
You know, one of the things in the Black culture, which is what I'm a part of, is, Kristen, sometimes the parents will say, you have to clean your plate regardless if it's full, clean it, force you, in some cases in the Black culture, to clean your plate, which is what if I'm just not hungry, in the mood, I'm full, any of the above, that is toxic, in my opinion. It's just, again, it goes back to your tone deaf to whether I'm full or do I want it or anything. You
know?
Yeah, clean your plate.
It's hard because we can't make that decision for anybody else's body. You know, it kind of goes hand in hand with like teaching consent too. You know, I always tell both of my kids, you are the boss of your own body. Nobody else is the boss of your own body, and you're not the boss of anybody else's. And I really try to connect that for them with food too. And when we are sitting and eating meals, I always ask them, does your tummy feel happy? Does it feel full? Do you feel like you need more, or do you think you're done? And I try as hard as possible not to ever make that decision for them, because realistically, I'm not in their body. I cannot make that decision, and only they can really pay attention to let me know. Just like, you know, they would never tell me, Mama, don't take another serving. You know, I don't even think that's a thought in their head to tell me not to eat more. So knowing that they can't control how my body feels, I want them to realize that I can't do that for them either. Only they can do that for themselves.
Right. And then there's this demographic of parents who, shoot, as soon as the child born, oh, at 18, they're out of here. Like, you know, they believe at that point a child should find their way, whatever that looks like. But things like having to make small decisions, what appear to be small decisions, such as what do you want to eat, are you full, asking them, that will more so prepare a child for when they are ready to go out on their own. The ironclad fist, you want them out at 18 is a hard thing to adjust to in a lot of cases.
Yes. Yeah, it does. It really does carry on, you know, when they are either moving out, heading to college, or getting their first job, first apartment, whatever, you know, when you're starting to become that relying on yourself adult for the first time, it makes a big difference when you're shopping for food for yourself, when you're ordering meals and paying for yourself, knowing, you know, can I really handle this full meal? Maybe I can bring some home and have it for another meal. Maybe this isn't enough and I need to get more. You know, really being able to tie that into what you're going to do on your own later is really a very helpful life skill. And again, if we start squashing that really early on with kids, it makes a big difference with how they behave later on and how they view food too. You know, the last thing we want is kids who do feel like they always have to clean their plate. They get uncomfortably full, and as they get older, start pulling away from food entirely. And since they don't want to feel full, they just don't really eat much anymore. Or to the other extreme as well, you know, feeling like they never get enough food. They're always hungry and need more. And so then they start eating in secret, hiding snacks, binging, and really like looking at how our attitudes towards food with children can really potentially have negative impacts on them later on in life. It's really scary that the children who sometimes get put in like inpatient programs for eating disorders are younger and younger every year now. You know, it used to be like just a teenage problem, but now we're seeing kids as early as like 10 that are going through these programs with such negative views on food and eating, and it's just absolutely terrifying. They're still such young children. So that's something that I'm very passionate about talking to my clients with, to do what we can to make food and eating a positive experience, a positive journey, and pulling that pressure away so that kids young now aren't feeling it later.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. And we're kind of going backwards a little bit, because now I want to talk about the pregnant women or the women who plan to become pregnant, right? So let's start with the women who plan to become pregnant and how you actually come in. Are you helping them to prepare to eat for the pregnancy, or explain that part of your job?
Yeah. So there is definitely importance to preconception nutrition as well. One of the things I definitely talk to women about who are not yet pregnant but are hoping to become so in the very near future that come to see me is, you know, I tell them if they are caught up yearly with having their wellness visits with their medical practitioners, I recommend that they get their basic blood tests done and share results with me, because we can look at some of the nutrient levels that they have before they become pregnant and see if there are any deficits where we need to focus on maybe particular foods in their diet now to get things back up to the ranges that are more optimal, or if there's things that maybe are in a range beyond what they should be and things need to be pulled back. So a lot of it is really kind of getting a baseline, like looking at where their vitamin D levels are, looking at their electrolytes, looking at some of their B vitamins through their blood work, and making sure that hopefully where they are is a strong place to start to have their bodies be in that hopefully optimal position to get pregnant. And then also, again, realizing that the idea of eating for two is not exactly what we see on TV and in movies. A lot of times, you know, if once you start, once you are pregnant and start through that first trimester, your fetus is exceptionally small. And it's really not till you get to that last month or two of pregnancy where, you know, you have a growing baby that is getting close to 4, 5, 6, 7 pounds or so. But the fact that we often tell women, oh, you're eating for two, like there's a whole other adult individual inside their body now with a second stomach that they can fill entirely. There's definitely some misconceptions about how pregnant women should eat too, that always baffles my mind, and realizing that that's kind of another extreme where people don't actually have to overindulge when they are pregnant. It's very similar to kids, where it's a lot of listening to your body. You know, if things feel good and you feel like you need more, enjoy it. If you feel discomfort, you know, maybe you've had enough for today, and when you start to feel hungry again, you reach for that meal or that snack. But it's like I said before, you are your own best judge of your body. And if you listen when it's hungry and you nourish it, and you listen when it says it's full and you kind of put the food away, that is when you're going to feel the best. And there are so many unknowns to how you will already feel in pregnancy that if you can, you know, take one off of your mind and not have to worry about it, making sure that you pay attention to when you do and do not need more food and when you need more water is probably one of the best things you can do for yourself.
What's one of your favorite things about your job, and then what's one of your biggest challenges?
Oh, man. I think it's one of the biggest feel-good moments for me. I've had it happen a couple of times, is I have definitely worked with some women who really were struggling with infertility for a couple of years. They had gone through IVF and, you know, lots of losses and a lot of struggles. And it was a very stressful time for their family. They, you know, kind of were starting to get to the point where they were ready to give up, thought maybe having a child wasn't for them, and, you know, wanted to try one more time just to see if, you know, seeing the practitioners that they'd already seen hadn't improved their situation. They came to me to see if shifting diet and things might make a difference. And there's nothing saying that I was the only thing that changed, but, you know, maybe it took some stress off of their plate. Maybe they slept a little better after talking to me. Maybe, you know, some of the diet shifts really did improve things a lot more than they were anticipating. But the feel-good moment for me is when I have an infertility client that I've been working with who suddenly sends me first that message that they actually are finally pregnant, and then months later send me the picture of their new baby, that not only did they get pregnant, but the pregnancy lasted, it went to term, and then they were finally, after all these years of struggle, were able to have that child they'd been working so hard for. Like, that is just like the greatest thing ever, to, you know, open my email and see that picture of that new baby. Like, almost nothing compares to that.
I can imagine. What a story.
Yeah. I've had it happen a couple of times. So, like, this melts my heart to the biggest puddle every time. It's so amazing. I love it.
Oh, my gosh. Kristen, and then which one is your biggest chunk?
I don't know if there's one specific thing that's a big challenge, but there are certainly clients who I have worked with in the past that, you know, after trying a lot of things, offering what I can after months of appointments, it seems like things just aren't going where they wanted them to be. And I think sometimes, you know, you just hit a point in a professional relationship where you've done all you can, and either the person is no longer willing to make changes, or there's just been enough of a shift where what I offer is not necessarily what they need anymore. And they either need to leave working with me and find somebody else that suits their needs better, or, you know, they just need to take a little break from me and do some things on their own until they are more mentally in a position where they're ready to make some big changes in their life. You always hope as a nutritionist that you will reach a point with your clients where they do not need you anymore, because they feel great, their symptoms have improved or completely gone away, that they are eating in a way that they feel they can sustain long term. So, you know, you don't ever want to have your clients forever. You want them to be able to say that their nutritional concerns were addressed, that their goals were met, and that they can go out on their own and eat in a way that helps them continue to be in their best body. But there are some times where, you know, sometimes they have to leave me and they don't feel like their goals have been met. And it's certainly a challenge on my end, knowing that there are some people that I might not be able to help, but hopefully there's somebody else out there who can continue the work with them and get them where they need to be. So I do always realize that I am not the nutritionist for everybody. But I certainly hope that the people, for the most part, who do come to see me feel like they really get what they need from me, and that I help their nutrition goals get met and put them in a path where they feel like they can then continue the work on their own without me.
And do you also account for a certain amount of those clients who just are not doing what you have recommended, and then they come back? This is like, you have a personal trainer. Are you doing what I'm saying, dude?
or not.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and again, that kind of varies by person as well. So there are some clients who, you know, they really need to check in with me weekly, and they need someone who really is going to hold them accountable and keep them motivated and really get them to where they need to be. And there's other people who it can be, you know, maybe we check in once a month or once every other month. Sometimes they really need to get the information from me up front and then take that time to let their new changes be incorporated into their daily routine, give their bodies the time they need to try something new and see how they feel. You know, a lot of what happens with nutrition does not change quickly overnight. When we're trying to figure out allergies and intolerances and things like that, sometimes we need a month or two to track what somebody's eating and look for consistencies that are causing issues. So it's quite a variety of clients that I see, some very frequently and some only on occasion. But yeah, they definitely account for that time with people. There are always follow-ups to yes, as you say, ask, you know, have you been doing the things I recommended? If you are, great. You know, have you noticed changes? Does there seem to be improvements? Are there changes that have not been as positive as you hoped? And on the same vein, if you're not doing what I recommended, well, why not? What's going on? You know, what's holding you back? Is there something else we need to address? Did I give you too much? And do we need to kind of pull a couple layers back so that you're in an easier place to start off with? You know, there's always obstacles in the way sometimes. So definitely always checking in to make sure that hopefully everyone is where they need to be. And if not, looking at what we can address to hopefully get some of those obstacles out of their way and get them back on track.
Excellent. Excellent. So as you and me discovered earlier, so this show is, you can listen to it anywhere, but you and me are both in Maryland. So if somebody wants to maybe get some services from you, or somebody want me to follow you on social media, like how can somebody reach out to you?
So my practice is called Brown, with an E on the end because it's my last name, Brown Bag Nutrition. So I am on Facebook as Brown Bag Nutrition. I'm also on Instagram as Brown Bag Nutrition. And my website is Brown with an E, bagnutrition.com. So as long as you have that E on the end of your Brown, you'll always be able to find me through Brown Bag Nutrition through all three of those sites.
Great play on words, by the way. I love a good play on words. So Brown Bag Nutrition, the best name being Brown, and it, like taking your lunch, like that's really, really cool. And you thought about that one. So,
so thank you. Then, I definitely had a lot of friends helping me brainstorm early on.
Yeah, and you guys came up with a great name. People underestimate the importance of names of companies. I want to leave this thing on a high note. So if you could say something encouraging to somebody who has, I don't know, food allergies or trying to get pregnant but can't because they know their diet is bad. Like, let's leave on a high note. Tell them something encouraging to uplift them, if you will.
There is no such thing as a good food or a bad food. All food is food. And as long as we use moderation with what we're consuming, unless you have an allergy or an intolerance, there really should not be anything that you restrict yourself from eating. If you are having a craving for something delicious that you think might not be the healthiest choice, eat it with purpose, and enjoy every single bite of it, every single smell of it, so that it makes your whole being happy. And know that after it's done, you can always choose something else that you feel might be a little healthier to pair it with or to follow it with. But always eat the things you enjoy. When we restrict, we can't stop thinking about those foods, and it drives us crazy. So if we allow ourselves to enjoy all foods of all kinds, even the ones that sometimes are deemed not the healthiest choice, overall mm-hmm. your body is going to feel so much better. Your mind is going to feel better because you allowed yourself to have that enjoyment. And that is how we continue to have a positive relationship with food.
I have truly enjoyed having you as a guest. I learned a lot. I really hope the listeners enjoyed you. You're versed. You're interested in your field. You have experience. You have the outcomes. You got some women with babies who never thought they would have babies. This is amazing. Like, I'm inspired. I mean, you helping populate the world. Keep going, okay? I thank you for giving us this hour, and I would love to keep in touch because this was inspirational, and I thank you for being our guest on this evening.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. I've loved it. This has been such a great time.
Thank you. Thank you very much, guys. You've been tuned in to Intro to Info with Makeisha and Tamika and Grandma and Kristen Brown. Listen, I hope you had a great listen. And have a productive week. We're moving on into the summer. Sooner than later, we're moving out of Taurus into Gemini in a minute. So let's continue to enjoy this warm weather as it gets only warmer. So I'm signing off, over and out. Thank you for your listenership. Have a good night, everybody. Thank you.